They turn grass, upon which you and I would starve, into food, upon which you and I can thrive. And so today we pause to ask, should we keep a family cow?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned in to the 935th edition of the Food Chain Radio program right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Yokohama who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Aaron Shore. He's on the boards. Aaron, welcome aboard.
Well, thank you very much.
Aaron, I have a question to ask you.
Sure thing.
Have you ever milked a cow?
No, but I've always wanted to try.
You always wanted to try. Have you ever tasted fresh, whole, raw milk?
That I have.
You have. Okay, good enough. Also with us today, we have producer Kelly Bayer. Kelly, hello.
Good morning. Hello.
So, have you ever milked a cow, Kelly?
I have. Last year, I did it for the first time.
First time, good. Yeah. And have you ever tasted raw milk?
Yeah.
You have? Okay, good. Relatively intelligent people that we're working with today. Okay, folks, you've heard it many times before, so here it is again. Don't have a cow. Well, in fact, many now complain that cows cause global warming because they pass too much gas. These folks tell us we shouldn't even have any kind of cow and we should get rid of them all. But before we do, before we chase the cows and out the door, we should consider this very elemental fact. The family cow can be the perfect one-stop family food factory. Through fermentation in the rumen, cows turn the grass upon which we would starve into high-protein food more perfect than anything we can buy at the supermarket. And we need not chop down any forest, nor fight any wars, nor sit in front of any computer to get the food. All we need do is take the milk from the cow. And hey, when the cow has aged and no longer produces milk, we can process her meat and fill a family freezer. Bottom line, no food comes more complete at less cost than the fresh whole milk we can get from the family cow. And through her, and though her milk may be white, a family cow could make us all very green. And so we ask, should we keep a family cow? Well, here to help us consider the possibility, we have Joanne Grauman, who is author of Keeping a Family Cow. Hello, Joanne. Welcome to the Food Chain.
Hello, hello. Good to be here.
Good to be here. And you're in Maine, right?
That's right, Western Maine.
That's a good place to be.
It's beautiful today.
Good for you. Beautiful out here on the coast. We're bi-coastal today. How long have you been keeping cows up there in Maine?
Well, on this particular farm, I'm in my 35th year of keeping a family cow.
And how long before that?
About 10 years.
So you've been keeping...
I'm 85.
You're 85?
Yes.
Well, thank you for joining us today. We really appreciate... You know what we really appreciate is the wisdom of your years. And I say that because, you know, a couple years ago, I was working a local county fair. And the manager of the fair had some juvenile delinquents out cleaning up the fair before it opened. I don't know if they call them juvenile delinquents anymore, but that's what they used to call them. And he happened to notice that all the kids were gathered around the 4-H barn. All these, so he went up there, better check in and see what's going on. So he went up there, and all these kids from the city were gathered around watching a young 4-H gal milk a cow. And he said the look in their eyes was one of pure amazement. And he just realized that we've lost touch. You know, we have what happened to us city people that we're so out of it with respect to food?
Is that a question?
That's a question for Joanne Grauman, author of Keeping a Family Cow.
Well, we have mostly gotten pretty far out of touch with where food comes from. And I have to say that considering that grass is the largest crop grown in the USA, mostly in the form of lawns, which we we grow and cut, throw away. It's a shame not to be feeding it to a cow, because she can turn it, as you mentioned before, transform it into a wonderful product.
And a product that we can thrive on, we can live on.
Yes, it's a complete food. You don't need really much else besides milk in order to be healthy.
And we've been doing just that for a long, long, long time. Let's talk about the cow for a minute. And the interesting thing about the cow to me, as pointed out in your book, was that the cow has no native counterpart, no wild. There is no wild cows. They're all tame cows.
That's right. The last wild cow died quite a few hundred years ago. But the tame cow is definitely the family friend. She's done great service for the human race for a long time now. We see cows pictured on in the tombs of the pharaohs from many thousands of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the cows all over the United States are doing their best to provide milk, but nothing beats the family cow for efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
Efficiency on all fronts. She does the work for you, as opposed to the stoop labor required to grow vegetables. I mean, I love vegetables, but when you can get the cow to do all the work and all you have to do is milk her, why, that's a situation that's over the centuries has proved irresistible to the human race.
And that's something we want to pick up and explore a little bit, the relationship between cows and people. Well, let's start it off right now. Cows and people live in kind of symbiosis because cows need people, right?
That's right. Cows do need people. If you have a cow, you have to take care of it. You have to make sure it doesn't get too much bad weather on it and has plenty of grass and water. Following a few simple procedures, such as fencing and protecting her from dogs, why, there's really not that much to taking care of a cow except common sense. And then compared to most other family pets, you really get back a lot better than you give. Cows are very friendly and loving and intelligent. They're just as intelligent as horses or dogs. Sometimes I think they're as intelligent as people.
And I guess you've been around a few of them, haven't you? Now, what is the difference between cow, for those of us who live in the city, what's the difference between a cow and cattle?
The difference between a cow and a
cattle? Well, cows and cattle.
The cattle is just the plural form of the word cow.
Okay. Well, I was thinking with respect to when you talk to a rancher, they say, I don't have cows, I have cattle. I raise, you know, beef cattle.
Yes, that's what they usually say. The use of the word cow is more convenient, I guess, to people or urban writers and speakers. But there's no great distinction to be had.
So they're the same
the
thing.
The cow is actually, to be really particular about it, the cow is the female, the bull is the male.
Mm-hmm. Are there different, of course, there's many different kinds of breeds, right? But some breeds we grow for beef, other breeds we grow for milk. Is that a fair statement?
That's a fair statement nowadays. In former times, they were all dual-purpose animals. But now that there's a sort of a separate market for beef and dairy, why, the breeding has been away from milk for beef cows and away from beef for milk cows. So the cow is very efficiently chooses to put her grass into milk rather than meat. So the average dairy cow looks kind of bony.
Ah, okay. I was wondering about that because when you see a commercial dairy, the cows do not look all beefed out like a beef herd would. If you were, I guess it's a good time to start in on the whole notion of raising a family cow. If you were going to raise a family cow, would you find a cow that was good for both, or would you look for one who is best for example, making milk?
Well, if you're in the part of the country where it's possible to buy a dairy animal, I would certainly go for the one that's a milk producer. But in some parts of the country, not too easy to find the right sort of cow, and you sort of take what you can get.
Okay.
I might just stick in a word here, since you mentioned it in the introduction about cows producing methane.
Well, wait a minute. Can you hold that? Because we have to take a quick break. And when we come back, it's the question everybody wants to know. What about all that methane that those cows pass as they're munching that grass?
I'll be glad to talk about it.
Okay. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson with Joanne Grauman and you. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080.
Get this. You can earn a 5-, 6-, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city. You can be old or young, rich or poor, married or single. You can rent, lease, or own. You can farm small fruits on prairie benchlands, houseplants in coastal valleys, flowers on steep wooded hillsides, vegetables in city green belts, ornamentals in neighborhoods of million-dollar homes. There's only one catch. You must compete with other farmers for the consumer dollars. You can compete with others and win the consumer dollars with the help of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for profit in or near the city. MetroFarm is the Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner that will guide you step by step through the planning and development of your very own income-generating metropolitan farm. Abraham Lincoln said the greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living on a small parcel of land. Get in on the future today. Get a copy of MetroFarm at www.metrofarm.com.
Here's an interesting notion. Let's have a cow. I mean, let's keep a family cow. That's a notion that probably most people, especially those of us who live in or near the city, would go, are you kidding me? I can't have a cow. But maybe we can. And if we could, that cow could be the perfect family food factory. Nothing does it better. Nothing does it for less money and less effort than a cow. Is that fair to say, Joanne Grauman?
I would certainly agree.
So, but some people would also say, but cows are flatulent and they make gas and then they contribute to global warming. And Joanne Grauman says what?
She says that the reason the cow is so valuable is that she ferments her food. She ferments it in a large organ that makes her have a big round tummy that's called the rumen. And the more she ferments, the more, well, fermentation always
produces gas.
The production of methane. That's the way it works, whether you're making your home brew or whatever you're making. And the cow produces a fair amount of methane because she's producing the most food for the buck. However, the idea that she was unbalancing the atmosphere is completely unfounded. When the idea came about that cows were producing gas, urban writers just assumed that this gas was leaving the cow by the back end, which was never true. Cows don't produce any more of that type of flatulence than any other animal, which is small but significant, of course, but really the methane emitted by a cow is just from her belching. She goes every so often while she's eating to, if pressure builds up in the rumen. This does not contribute to global warming. It's been the digestive process of everything that eats grass.
Mm-hmm. Often
and
thought often
all the buffalo that ever roamed the prairie.
I often thought that that whole line of reasoning was probably something that was put out by people who don't want other people to eat meat.
I think you are absolutely right. The idea that the cow was somehow a damaging component of the food chain is really couldn't be farther from the truth.
And because they do what we can't do, and they do it so much, make our lives so much easier if you stop and think about it, and very few of us ever stop to think about you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, cows go out and they eat grass, which is something that we can't do. And they turn that grass, which would otherwise just be grass, into high protein food, so valuable you can't find it at a supermarket.
That's right, and somewhere between 30% and 40% of the Earth's surface is covered by grass. It's part of nature's plan to have something eating that grass.
And the Earth kind of lives in symbiosis with the grazers too, correct?
Absolutely. This is the important work of Alan Savory, that some of you probably heard of, who mm-hmm. has done so much work to clarify this relationship. Everything is, all flesh is grass.
There you go. And thus the whole notion of people becoming grass farmers now, whereas before they used to be beef farmers or sheep farmers. Now they're thinking of themselves as grass farmers, because that's really what they're doing, is they're converting grass or adding value to grass, which is what the cow does, and which is why we're talking about it today. And just, you know, throughout history, the cows have been a source of wealth for individual families. In a very interesting sort of way, grain, you know, we've been raising grain for 10,000 years. But, you know, to be efficient at raising grain, you have to have slaves, right?
Absolutely. There wasn't any huge grain crop until people found a way to get somebody else to do the work. There's only one way. Well, there's only three ways of producing grain. One is with huge implements run on fossil fuel. One is by using animal traction, and the other is stoop labor. There's no other way to get vegetable crops or grain. But in the case of the cow, why, she does the work, and this was pretty obvious to people from the year dot, long before the advent of grain. There's really no way of knowing how far back people were nomadic herders. But the reason they're nomadic herders is because they have animals that eat grass, and they're moving them along to where the grass is. The animals are providing meat and milk, and the people are riding their ponies.
Right. You tell the fascinating story of Genghis Khan, and what made Genghis Khan so powerful was milk.
Absolutely, it was milk. The woman figured out how to make dried milk, actually, and they sent it along with the warriors, and in the morning they would take some of this dried milk product and put it into a saddlebag and add some water, and by the end of the day it was formed something like cottage cheese, and they didn't have to stop and wait for the quartermaster to catch up. They had always the element of surprise because they didn't have to stop. That plus the invention of the stirrup was the secret of Genghis Khan.
And, of course, with the stirrup, that means the rider of the horses could stand up and use his arms for wielding weapons and whatnot.
That's right, shooting off his arrows.
So the milk that the armies of Genghis Khan traveled on was mare's milk, correct?
It was horse's milk. Mm-hmm.
I mean, they didn't like herd cattle along.
Not as much.
Let's go back to this notion of throughout history, the cow was a source of wealth for the family, for the individual family, where grain tended to be concentrated in the hands of slaveholders. You had to
Absolutely.
Be a slaveholder to grow a lot of grain. No other way to do it. But you could be an individual. You could be free, so to speak, if you had a cow.
Mm-hmm. Anyone who could be with a cow is basically going to be a freeholder.
And because the cow was a great source of wealth. As a matter of fact, you talk about how the original stock in stock market was the cow.
Absolutely, and you can see pictures of cows being lined up in a row, either for sale or for milking, in Neolithic cave paintings like Altamira.
And so,
those were painted 25,000 years ago. People were already organizing cattle for human profit.
And You know, I was once up in South Dakota, and I got lost on a country road, and I pulled into a dairy farm to ask for directions. And a young man came out of the barn, and he had boots on, and he'd been wading in cow manure. But, you know, he had this wonderful look in his eyes. It was just clear and smart and intelligent. And he smiled, and I thought, you know, you don't see that with kids in the city. And I think that there is something about being a cow person that forces you to be a good person.
Well, I think that's so true. I've said for a long time that I don't think it's any coincidence that so many of the great leaders of the United States have grown up on a farm, because if you take care of animals successfully, you either were an organized, hardworking, responsible person to begin with, or you get that way in a hurry, or the animals don't thrive. And it's very satisfying to take care of animals, especially cows, I'd say, but people could make a case for a few other kinds of animals. They're really build a relationship within the family and do what I call centering.
Uh-huh.
So before long, you don't even want to get off the farm. You just like to stay there, and because that's where your home is.
And that's what we're going to talk about when we come back. So I want to ask you, Joanne Grauman, author of Keeping the Family Cow, is it possible to be a bad person and keep cows? This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, we're talking about the possibility of keeping a family cow and what that does to our lives when we come back. Pick up your phone and join us if you'd like to talk cows. 831-479-1080. Thank you. Right back. Should we keep a family cow? Boy, that's an interesting question. And of course, why should we keep a family cow? One reason is that the family cow can process grass, upon which we would starve, into a whole food so rich in nutrition that you can't find anything like it in the supermarket. We can thrive on it. Another reason we might keep a cow is because it's a transformative thing for the human personality. When you keep a cow, or any other animal for that matter, you have to be a caring person. And that's the end of it. Right, Joanne Grauman?
Well, you certainly do. And there's many caring people keeping cows. I love your ads. They sound, make all the food in the area sound great. I wonder if you'd like a word about lactose intolerance.
Yes. Tell us about lactose intolerance.
Well, lactose intolerance just means that the enzyme that deals with the milk sugar called lactose is absent in the gut, which it is in some people. And it's necessary to produce... In order to digest milk, all babies have it, and sometimes after weaning, it dwindles away and ceases to be produced, so that milk doesn't digest too well and people get sort of a bloated feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been suggested that since a disproportionate number of lactose intolerant people are of African or South Asian or other hot climate origin, that there's some implication that such all these folks don't need milk. But we know that in Africa, the cows have been the medium of exchange for many hundreds of years and continue to be in many parts of Africa. And this isn't because they don't drink milk. It's because they don't drink pasteurized milk. Pasteurized milk lacks the enzyme lactase, and if you don't produce it, well, you have to get it somewhere else or you can't digest the milk. But in the case of raw milk, the naturally occurring lactobacilli start to ferment the milk right away, and particularly in a warm situation, so that actually, in a hot climate, the milk is always provided with its own lactase, thanks to the bacteria. And since in nature there's a tendency, if you don't use it, you lose it, you don't really have to be able to produce your own lactase, because the milk is going to do it for you, the bacteria that ferment milk. So it's really a question that is based on the assumption people are going to be drinking pasteurized milk, which indeed you will need to have turned into a fermented product like yogurt in order to digest. People that are lactose intolerant almost invariably say that they have no trouble with raw milk.
Wow. Well, that brings us to, you know, the big question. When you have a family cow, you can have fresh, whole, raw milk. I was raised on this stuff. It was amazing. Here in the city, it's almost impossible to get it. As a matter of fact, I think that government is now running around with SWAT teams arresting farmers for selling it to their friends and neighbors. How did we become so fearful of the fresh, whole, raw milk of cows?
Well, it started out as a combination of health concerns and the concerns of people who wanted to be able to make more money off of milk. In the large dairy, there's really no way to deal with huge amounts of milk without pasteurizing it. It's not going to keep long enough to reach the customer. In former times, there were lots of family cows, and there were lots of very small dairies which could deliver locally, and they were able to provide a very fine product, and it was safe and clean, but it didn't keep more than a day or two at the best of times because of lack of refrigeration and dependence on using just a spring water or blocks of ice, safe in winter. And as this, the idea of collecting cows up into large dairies and making it into a large commercial proposition expanded, it became really necessary to pasteurize the milk because, as I said, it's not going to reach the customer in good condition otherwise.
Right. So
there are some possibilities of disease. There's no question about that. If you're going to have large groups of cows, the larger the group of cows, the harder it is to make sure they're all in a healthy state.
So then, like many other things, the laws are set up to force the consumption of pasteurized milk.
Yes.
And the act of pasteurizing really makes it hard for small family farm dairies and individuals to survive if you have to comply with all of these rules that are designed for these giant dairies,
yeah,
right?
The rules have been crafted to give an advantage to the large producer, and at the same time, a very large body of medical people has supported the idea of pasteurization being the best way to have safe milk. It does provide safe milk on the whole, but it was perfectly possible to have safe raw milk, but not safe raw milk in huge commercial quantities.
Right, so it's a function of scale there. The bigger you get, the more you have to take out of your milk, essentially. You have to sterilize it.
Yes.
Yeah. How much land do we need to have a family cow?
Well, a cow just needs a little exercise, so she needs to be able to walk around. And if you don't have enough grass on your backyard, why, you're going to have to buy in hay. But many people have and continue to keep cows in a very small space. It's nice if you have a great big area the size of a football field, but it is necessary. However, in order to gain the advantages of being a grass farmer, you need not only a fair, but you need more than one animal. It's perfectly possible, though, to just keep one cow, and many people do it. I belong to a forum of hundreds of people who all have just, you know, maybe about one cow and share their knowledge.
Oh, so it's like a co-op of some kind?
Well, I have a website with an associated forum that is serves the needs of...
And that website is?
Well, my website is www.keepingafamilycow.com, and there's a link there to the discussion forum, which is also accessible.
Okay, good.
It's very easy to find.
Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about what it takes to raise a family cow. I can't wait. And to learn...
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I want to hear about the fun right back. Do stay tuned.
All right.
Well, the other thing that we need to consider, of course, are the different kinds of food that can be... be produced by the cow. We get the fresh whole milk, but from that fresh whole milk, we can do all kinds of things, right, Joanne?
Oh, yes. So many people are trying to make perfectly marvelous cheeses. Such an exciting hobby. If you have your own cow, why, you don't have to go out and buy milk at some huge amount per gallon and feel awful bad when the cheese doesn't turn out right, which sometimes it doesn't.
How do you make cheese?
Well, you have to, you have to make the milk form a curd, which it will do with the addition of rennet or thyme, but mostly with the addition of rennet, which is an enzyme.
Mm-hmm.
And it forms the milk into a pretty solid lump, and you cut the lump up into pieces called curds, and you drain them out, drain the whey out, most of the casein protein in the milk remains in the curd, and the whey protein is more watery and it drains off.
Mm-hmm. And that in itself is very valuable protein, too, the whey protein, as I understand it.
Oh, yes. Whey protein, excuse me, is very valuable. It's just pretty hard to make cheese with it.
Mm-hmm.
So you drain the curds and... This is pretty simplified, but okay. Then you press it so that it gets more and more whey out, and then you age it. And it's just, as with baking cakes and bread, the small variations in a few very simple ingredients give you strikingly different results.
And away we go. Then also, of course, we can make yogurt. How do you make yogurt?
Well, you have to have a yogurt starter. Buy a commercial yogurt that says it has active yogurt bacilli in it, or you can buy a powdered starter at the health food store, and you just stir that into your milk and hold it at about 110 degrees for a few hours, and then you have a nice large vessel full of yogurt, or a whole collection of small vessels.
Mm-hmm. And what about butter? You can make butter, too.
Oh, yes. Well, to make butter, you have to get the cream off of the milk, which will naturally do if you haven't got homogenized milk, because normally cream will rise up to the top of the milk. That's what it's meant to do. And then you skim it off, and you agitate it in some way until it...
Churn it, right.
It gives up.
Yeah,
you churn it. And it, eventually it'll, after a few minutes or longer... It'll break up into two fractions, the fat fraction and the buttermilk fraction. You hear about low-fat buttermilk, but all real buttermilk is low-fat because it's what comes off of the fat, the butter.
So that's how you get low-fat buttermilk, is by churning it. And there you go. What is ghee?
Well, ghee is butter that's been melted and heated, so there's small amount of... sugars and so forth that are in the butter settle to the bottom of the pan, and you simmer it for a while and pour the liquid butter, which is really oil at this point, off into another container. It's extremely good for cooking with, and because it has a higher smoke point. It doesn't burn as readily as cooking with true butter.
And also, Kelly Bayer wants to know about cream cheese. How do you make cream cheese?
Uh-huh. Well, instead of making butter out of your cheese, out of your cream, you let the cream get sour, a little bit sour, which you can do by adding a little bit of your buttermilk or your yogurt starter. And after about a day at around 60 to 70 degrees, your cream will form a solid curd, just as it would if you were making cheese. And then you drain that through, a good quality paper towel can be used or a linen napkin, and let it drain usually till the next day, and then stir in a little salt, and there's your cream cheese. It's terribly easy.
Well, most of it, of course, is a natural process, you know, made possible through the bacteria in the environment, in the milk. Everything so it seems so easy.
Well, it is.
There it is.
It comes if you keep your surroundings very clean and have fresh air coming in, and your product was clean to begin with, your results are going to be very nice. You'll be very happy.
And a cow can make you very happy. So says Joanne Grauman, author of Keeping a Family Cow. Where do we start? How do we start to, producer Kelly Bayer wants to know, what do I do? Where do I start?
Well, it's awfully nice if you have a partner, because it's just like with having children. It's so much more fun if there's two of you. So anyway, then you want to find out where you're going to keep your cow, have a spot for her to live. And then you start looking for somebody who's willing to sell you a cow. And then you find someone with a horse trailer who'll bring it home for you and put her in your spot and learn to brush her and keep her water tub full. And
okay, we're going to come back and we're going to talk about the space and how much grass and what you can feed them, because maybe there you can feed a cow something else other than the lawn. Who knows?
Oh, yes.
We're going to find out when we come back. We're talking with a gal who knows. 85 years of tending cows, Joanne Grauman, author of Keeping a Family Cow, something you and I have never thought about. But we're thinking about it this morning because we can. This is the food chain, and we do things like that. And if you'll stay tuned, we're going to find out what we can feed our family cow when we come back. Do stay tuned. Well, it occurs to me that there is one question I must ask Joanne Grauman, author of Keeping a Family Cow, and that's about brucellosis and the danger, I guess, of raw milk. Is there a danger of contracting brucellosis, Joanne?
Well, not much in this country. There's very little brucellosis in the USA. Most states have been declared free of it for decades. There's sometimes hints of it that from cows that wander across the southern border, and there have been a few instances among the wild buffalo in Yellowstone, but basically that disease, which used to be fairly widespread, is so rare that you really almost don't have to worry about it, and the same being true of tuberculosis. Nearly every state in the U.S. is so free of tuberculosis that my vet just says don't even bother getting tested unless you think you're going to sell your cow, because a lot of people naturally want to have their cow have it tested. And there's no reason not to have your cow tested if it will make you happy.
Yeah, amen to that. Then you know. So is there any danger at all from consuming the milk of a family cow?
Well, it's pretty hard to find any danger from it, but I guess there's some danger from everything that you can ever eat.
I suppose takes you back to the character of the person tending the cow. You just have to be a good person. Otherwise, it's not going to work anyway. So
there's not much more likelihood of the cow transmitting, your family cow transmitting anything, disease to you than mother's milk. It's not impossible, but it's unlikely.
Right. What can we feed them?
Well, when you run out of lawn, you can, if you don't want to buy hay, you can feed them corn stalks, whole corn cobs, or pumpkins, or just about anything else that contains cellulose, turnips and everything. But the cow, in order for her rumen to function efficiently, must have long fiber. They're evolved to eat grass, so she's got to have some hay every day, irrespective of what else that you give her.
So think a living compost pile.
Absolutely. You can probably plan to give your cow a little bit of grain if you're in a small holding, because she needs the extra calories in some cases. You just have to watch her ribs. If you can see more than three ribs, you need some more high-calorie food of some sort. And grain is what most people choose to feed.
Right.
If you don't want to feed any grain, there are other options, like vegetables and things.
Apples. What do you feed your cows?
I feed my cow all she wants of grass on a pretty large pasture, but in Maine, the grass only grows about less than 6 months a year. So the rest of the time, she has hay, and she has, a small amount of grain.
Okay, we're running out of time, doggone it. But I've sure enjoyed talking with you, Joanne Grauman, author of Keeping a Family Cow. And if you folks want to learn a lot more about the possibility and the potential of keeping a family cow, the website is keepingafamilycow.com, right, Joanne?
That's right, and a new edition of my book is coming out in November.
Well, thank you so much for joining it. Really appreciate it. And folks, see you next week for more with What's Eating What Radio. Remember, cheap food isn't.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.